Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week with Dr. Team, our weekly news program on Monday mornings at 11 a.m. I want to announce today that we're having a special guest on that's been on here before. And, you know, all of our podcasts now are posted daily at 11 a.m., and they are available for you whenever you want to watch them. And we broadcast on X and Rumble and Cloud Hub and all sorts of places so that you can find our podcasts, our daily podcasts, at 11 a.m. We also post a written little piece that sometimes has a little video with it over on our Substacks. Our Substack is dr10penny.substack.com and also 10pennywalkwithgod.substack.com. So we've provided for you all kinds of things and your 10 Penny Prime membership, your benefits that you get, including a very important topical wellness paper is a benefit for you, recorded educational presentations, and a live event with the Ask the Expert the last Wednesday night of the month. And if you missed our last month's Ask the Expert with Dr. Bashima Williams about the GI tract, it was over the moon good. And it is available now at dr10penny.com and also shop10penny.net under the educational tab. We really want to make this year be a year of knowledge, empowerment, and action. And if you're not a member already, you can go to shop10penny.net under the membership tab and join. Read about all the different benefits and join. So before I introduce you to today's special returning guest, investigative journalist Donald Jeffries, talking about his new book, American Memory Hole, How the Court Historians Promote Disinformation. We're going to take a quick break. This is going to be really interesting. Don's been on before talking about his other books that are kind of in this series of forgotten history. And this one, which I actually have, I've actually read, I actually have it tabbed on the side, will be very interesting conversation you don't want to miss. We'll be right back. Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant. You can take it when you're nursing. You can give it to little children. You can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out, the heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years. Go to dr10penny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off. Well, welcome back, everyone. Donald Jeffries is a best-selling author and investigating journalist who we have been following for years. He is best known for his investigations into the assassination of JFK. He was a guest of mine back in 2021. We talked about his book, Hidden History, an Exposé of Modern Crimes, Conspiracies, and Cover-ups in American Politics, which started with the assassination of President John F. Kennedy and then set the story straight about a wide variety of issues that have plagued our country's history. And we're going to talk a little bit about that since the new papers have been released. But his new book, American Memory Hole, How the Court Historians Promote Disinformation, I find really fascinating since I was labeled one of the disinformation dozen. And so it's really interesting to see how it's been going on for a really long time. Don thoroughly documents how cancel culture was born during the administration of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and how our interventionist foreign policy was established during the Woodrow Wilson presidency. He recounts the shocking abuses of our military forces in countries such as Mexico, Haiti, the Philippines, and elsewhere. Don, welcome back to This Week with Dr. T. I can't wait to dig into your new book.
It's great to be back. I can't believe it's been 4 years. It didn't seem like it's been that long. Thanks for having me on.
It really doesn't. You say in your book there is a never-ending supply of ignored, suppressed, and misinformation, misrepresented facts. And you said that you never run out of things to talk about or write about, and you're trying to bring history we know into alignment with the facts. This is your third book that you've written on history. How did you get started on these rabbit holes, and how do you keep finding them?
Well, I started out as a teenager. I've been awake pretty much since I was able to critically think at all as a teenager. So I didn't have an epiphany. I was always a doubter and a skeptic. And I started looking into the assassination. I was always a Kennedy fanboy. I was 7 when he was killed, and I had a huge impact on me because I had a Catholic family, and I saw them all crying for the first time and speculating. They were all speculating about who really did it. So I never thought Oswald did it as a 7-year-old. So as a teenager, I just started beginning to be a little politically aware. And I started looking at the books, and one of them was Rush to Judgment by Mark Lane. And he had a group called the Citizens Committee of Inquiry. And I joined that, and I led one of the local chapters in Northern Virginia. I got to meet him and everything. So it was very. Got to go to the archives and hold the gun and the magic bullet and see the clothing. And I had a special, private viewing of the Zapruder film in a nice room. So it was pretty cool for an 18-year-old. So that was my start down the rabbit holes. The JFK assassination is my wheelhouse issue. But that led naturally to MLK and RFK. And then eventually, especially by the time the 90s hit, I called that Conspiracy Central with Bill Clinton. I mean, there were so many things, one after the other, Ruby Ridge, Waco, Oklahoma City, JFK Jr., Vince Foster. So I just started, realizing the JFK assassination didn't happen in a vacuum. And I was originally a very liberal, very far leftist when I started out. And eventually I came to realize, well, this is the Democrats aren't the good guys. And I became an independent. I don't know what I am now. I get accused of being everything, so from communist to white nationalist. So I'm a populist, basically.
In your previous books, you dive into the investigations of JFK's murder, and you take on a different explanation in your new book. What did you find that was new information? And I really would like your take if I'm sure you started to dig through the JFK papers that have been released. Is there anything there that you didn't already know and haven't already written about?
Well, yeah, there was and people have kind of poo-pooed it, but a few interesting things. Just the other day, because it kind of came out belated, I looked through the files, and it's really tedious wading through them. There's so many, and 99% of them are meaningless. There's a lot on there about the HS House Select Committee staff and getting their passcodes, and they were criticized. Trump was criticized because they did not redact their Social Security numbers, but they didn't redact anything. So, which that was different for me. So I give Tulsi Gabbard credit for that. Apparently, she was instrumental in saying we don't want anything redacted. So it was nice. And one thing we saw is that how many times in previously released documents Israel was retracted. And there's one document that has on there at the bottom of it, it says CIA authorizes the release of all information except for bracketed items. And you can see every single item that was bracketed had to do with Israel once they were not redacted. So we learned James Jesus Angleton, who was a big shot in the CIA, and he was their man with the Mossad in Israel. We know now that he recruited Oswald out of the Marines at age 20. So we know for a fact that he was recruited to the CIA at age 20. I think that's huge. And Angleton's fingerprints are all over that. I don't know, to what degree Israel had anything to do with this, but the CIA didn't want them mentioned. And then to cap it off, just the other day, I saw that there is a memo that came out that talked about Jim Garrison having, we haven't seen the document, but it was I think an FBI memo saying that Jim Garrison claims he has documentation to show that Lee Harvey Oswald used Jack Ruby as a job reference in the summer of 1963, which, I mean, we already know they knew each other. There's tons of evidence for that, but that's really concrete evidence. So those kind of things are amazing. And I think I mentioned in American Memory Hole, just as an aside, because I always thought it made no sense, but JFK Jr. is supposedly in 1994, he supposedly wrote a kind of a threatening letter to then Senator Joe Biden and called him a traitor. And I always thought, well, that doesn't make any sense. These files re refer to that. Now, I don't know if it was real, and if it was, I couldn't make head or tail of that. It makes no sense. There's no context why he called him a traitor. But it was somebody took it seriously enough to mention it. in a document here. So those are the kind, there's lots of interesting things there, but a lot of them have to do with Israel, like I said. And so that's why there's so much wide speculation now that I don't think Israel was the main culprit behind the assassination, but there's some reason why they wanted to redact all the references to them.
And wasn't there somebody else that was supposedly there's documentation that he was hired to kill JFK, that it really wasn't Ruby, and had a lot of and that there were multiple different gunshots that they hadn't really talked about before. I'm not a big JFK's assassination.
No. Yeah, no, there's, I mean, there's, if you studied, again, as a teenager back then, I mean, the old evidence is good enough. I mean, there's, everyone who has studied this, who doesn't have an axe to grind or, doesn't benefit by lying, realizes you study this for a week, as I did as a, 17-year-old, and you realize, okay, whatever happened, Oswald couldn't have done it. They inadvertently proved that he didn't shoot anybody. But then you realize, okay, how's that? The bullet holes in the clothing are too low to have come from six stories above and then exited at a higher level, the throat. That's what the single bullet theory says. And plus, it came out in perfect condition. It took me decades to realize, because I used to say, oh, the single bullet, which I held in my hand, this is a perfect condition. It looks like it didn't hit anything. And in fact, it matches what the appearance of the same ammunition in the commission's own volumes that was fired into Cotton Wadding. So it took me decades to realize, well, these are sophisticated conspirators. These are probably intelligence agents, and we don't know what kind of connections they have, but they're representing powerful interests. Why wouldn't they have shot the bullet that they planted and hit a tree or something? Put a bullet there that looks like it hits something. And I said, that's a calling card. And then later, when we saw 9/11, we saw something very similar when the passport of one of the hijackers came out in pristine condition and right on top of all the rubble, which obliterated steel and stone, but somehow it didn't do anything to the passport. I said, that's another calling card. And I look for those kinds of things. I think the people that do these things, I think they want us to know they're doing it. Like Jack the Ripper taunting Scotland Yard back in the day. It's just that no matter how much they taunt us, there's still a minority of us that get it. Everybody else just, oh yeah, the passport was undamaged. That's amazing.
Yeah, and they found it within hours of when the Twin Towers came down too. I
Yeah, oh
remember
yeah.
that, it was sort of like people our age remember where we were when JFK was shot. I think there's another whole generation of people that remember where they were the day the Twin Towers came down and what was
Right.
going on. I remember going to my office that morning, and there was one scene that was shown on. There was people that had on computers and they had on the news that we never saw again. And it was at the very beginning that the newscasters said, looks like some small plane just kind of flew into the side of the building. Why was there a small plane that close? And we saw this hole in the side that they said, and we never ever saw that again. And I remember it because at the time I was dating a guy that lived in New York City. So I had a particular interest in, what was kind of going on there. And then within, minutes after that, the first, plane or whatever, and the first tower came down. And the first thing that came out of my mouth was, daggone it, they finally pulled it off. They finally did it. And I came home and spent the next 2 days sending off emails and making phone calls and trying to find out where the underground was that was going to that saw this as clearly as I did. And I went out to the UN National Security site, which was still open at that time that anybody could go there, and started reading documents that from the Indian newspapers talking about that the conversation between the US government and the Taliban had fallen apart about the pipeline that was to go from into the Bay of Pakistan, and it was going to fall apart, and that there was probably going to be war. That was 2 years before the Twin Towers came down. And then that was closed up and you could never see it again. But I remember that as plain as day. And I'm trying to explain that to people who lived for a decade in terror because of the terrorist attack, So and I remember saying, it hasn't even been like 6 hours and we know who these people were and we found their passport and we found all this documentation. I mean, I
Amazing.
spent as soon as we went back to our office, I was like, this is a setup. This really is an inside job. And for years, people called me a conspiracy theory, tinfoil hat nut because I didn't along with the narrative.
Welcome to the club. Yeah, you know, in American Memory Hole, that I have a lot of stuff where I go over those kinds of things that were and all these narratives. At the beginning, you find some really interesting tidbits like that that are reported. And as you know, I put in there there are two or three references, you know, from mainstream news to a truck being parked at the base of one of the Twin Towers, and people thinking there were explosives in the truck. Were initial reports about that, never anything else out there. We learned here, not only in my previous book, Hidden History, I talked about all the evidence for explosions in the sub-basements. You know, again, 80 some stories below, and they felt some kind of explosion. How is that even possible? And now we know, I talked a lot about Building 6. You know, we talk about Building 7, which of course, you know, is I think the proof of you know that nothing hit that, because nothing struck Building 7, and yet it still collapsed just like the other two. But Building 6 also is crucial here, and I talk about the guy Sonnenfeld, who's now still in exile in Argentina. They tried to frame him for murder. I think somebody killed his wife, and they tried to frame him for it afterwards because he was talking about Building 6 and how the gold, well, that's where a bunch of gold was stored, and the gold disappeared. And I had this story in the book, but I mean, nobody talks about Building 6, and nobody talks about this guy who's in exile in Argentina. I'd love to be able to get a hold of, but I'm on my show, but it doesn't seem to be easy to contact. But so there's so many things, and I go into as much depth as I can. We know there were over 150 separate firefighters alone that talked specifically about explosions in the building. So I mean that's and yet the 9/11 Commission report, just like the Warren report would have, would just completely contradict the evidence and say something like there's no credible evidence of explosions. Well, 150 different firefighters saying it, who were there inside the building, and you guys made them into great heroes and set up a huge fund for the ones that survived, but their testimony is meaningless. So people can read all about it. It's just fascinating accounts that again have been lost down, you know, what I call the memory hole, which I think is inappropriate for this, because we have, in 1984, Orwell had Winston Smith, his protagonist, worked for the Ministry of Truth, and one of his jobs was to send inconvenient information down the memory hole. So if it didn't work anymore, he that it no longer existed, and that's what we see here. All these, most of these things I'm talking about, they're first of all, they're hard to find too. I have researchers that help me for free, which is, I don't have a budget, and it's wonderful. Chris Graves and Peter Seacost have done a great job on that. But I need their help because, when I first wrote Hidden History and Survival of the Richest, first couple of my books, I could research it on my own pretty easily just using search engines. Can't do it anymore. All the search engines are controlled. You have to really dive deep and play games with words because they know what you're looking for. Every search engine uses Google's algorithm. I use Yandex, the Russian search engine, the most, but even that is, problematic. So finding these things is not easy. So, but, we did what we could, and people can just you look in there and see. I mean, I don't know. Again, and one of the other things that I found fascinating, you mentioned something from you were looking at information from the Indian newspapers. You had to go to German media for this, but I was fascinated to find, because a lot of people say, well, the 19 hijackers, some or all of them are still alive. Well, we have one of the fathers of Muhammad Atta, probably the most well known of the hijackers. I found it fascinating. Interview with him with German TV or German newspaper because they had to go to Germany. No American media was interested, where he claimed his son had called him after 9/11 and was in fear, hiding out for his life because he said he was being framed by the Mossad. It's like, what? So the American media wasn't interested in that. I mean, maybe the father's crazy and he's imagining his son is alive, but that's not a news story. So I don't know what that means. But and again, he's the one whose passport came down magically as well. So he'd be an interesting guy to talk to.
You know, you said that you think that the left treats the Kennedys unfairly.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is, and do they still do that?
Oh, look at what RFK Jr. is experiencing. I mean, now they're in the midst of some kind of scandal they're trying to create with some journalist or something who has connections to other strange. I forget who I was hearing about. I can't remember her name, but Nettles or Nuttles or something. But they're trying to take him down. And again, I don't know how much truth there is to the Kennedys and women. I mean, it's become kind of cliche now. So maybe they just can't resist. I don't know. But that's become the public perception. So if they use that, people, oh yeah, okay, it's a Kennedy. So I don't know what's there, but it seems like they're really going after him full force. And they've treated him, you know, when you watch those hearings, there wasn't a single Democrat that wasn't like a pit bull with him. I mean, none of them attempted to be halfway even-handed. Again, this guy had been a Democrat all his life. His family is one of the most historic Democratic Party families. And his own family, look at his own family. It's Caroline Kennedy, who I talk a little about in the book in terms of what a piece of work she is. And, you know, and her son, Jack Schlossberg, the grandson of JFK. Ah, this guy should be in a padded room somewhere. If you've seen some of the videos he puts out, he is a nut. He actually got on a video and, you know, ridiculed, made fun of RFK Jr.'s voice, which, and, you know, this his great aunt founded the Special Olympics. And I
Wow.
tweeted back to him. I said, "Are you and your sister going to go ridicule the participants at the span heckle the Special Olympics next?" I mean, what kind of a person does that? But he won't let go. He calls RFK Jr. names all the time, and he was up in arms. He doesn't want anything talked about the JFK assassination. This is his grandfather. He was up in arms that anything was. He was mad that CNN covered it dishonestly, but they still covered it. I saw his tweet and I said, "This guy is nuts." And both him and his sister, his mother, Caroline, put out that ridiculous video where she made up nonsense about JFK putting rabbits in blenders or some not ridiculous, crazy CIA type stuff. And in my book, I talked about how when RFK Jr.'s diary, and then why he kept the diary, I don't know. That's kind of an odd thing to do in this day and age. He's older than me, so I don't know anybody that keeps a diary, but he supposedly had one. And it's full of, I have some excerpts from it in the book. And he talks about Caroline's husband. Apparently, everybody hated this guy, Schlossberg. He said, we're all, you know, JFK Jr. wants to start an I Hate Ed Club. And he talked about the kind of the friction between Caroline and JFK Jr. at the time of his death. And most people don't know that when his plane was missing, the Kennedy family gathered together at their compound, famously, you know, Hyannis Port compound. Only one person was missing. Caroline didn't go. She was
Wow.
by herself. Yeah, she was by herself with her family. The time of his death, they had been feuding, and it's never said. This is my supposition because of my investigation into JFK Jr.'s assassination, which it wasn't an assassination. They killed him. And there's no question, and I have a lot more in this book about that as well. But we know now, I know from talking to his high school girlfriend and somebody who's an adult in her circle. Journalist Wayne Madsen, lots more. There's so much evidence that shows JFK Jr. was reading the same books I was as a youngster. He was obsessed with his father's assassination. He had a quest to find out the truth. And at the time of his death, he had set up an interview with Wayne Madsen, who I've talked to, an independent journalist, who was going to be hired by George Magazine. And his assignment was the assassination of President Kennedy. So just imagine what the, and again, he was also getting ready to enter politics at the same time. So I just speculate that the friction between Caroline and JFK Jr. had to do with his obsession with the JFK assassination because she doesn't want anybody talking about it. And that's my speculation. I think that's reasonable speculation, but there's
Why
lots
doesn't
of
she want anybody
Kennedy
talking
tidbit.
about it?
Yeah, why?
Why doesn't she want anybody talking about it?
I don't know. You know, she's a year younger than me, and so it's basically the same age. And you know, I don't. You're talking about over 60 years ago. I mean, yeah, I know that was your father, but you still can't talk about his death over 60 years ago. And you're a little, especially when there's been so much speculation about it. You think you'd have an interest like your brother did, but we see in the Kennedy family the way RFK Jr. has been attacked by everyone, all his brothers and sisters, except maybe one brother, I think. All of them, you know, repudiated him and said, "No, we want nothing. This guy's a nut." They've called him basically the names they would call us, and so he stood alone against his entire family. And JFK Jr. was the only other one. Those two are the only ones I know of in the Kennedy family that had any interest in the deaths of JFK and RFK. And again, that's another mark against. Even if RFK Jr. wasn't talking about all the stuff he was in terms of HHS and getting our food and water clean finally, and vaccines and all that stuff. The fact that he's openly saying the government killed his father and his uncles is, I never thought I'd hear any presidential candidate say that.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about his position? I mean, you know, the Kennedy's name has always been synonymous with Democrats. I mean, that, you know, sort of like the you know, the Democrat family, the whole Democrat Party. And then what do you think about his position with Trump and the Trump administration?
Well, Trump is, again, I continue to write about him. He's disappointed me a lot lately, but the beginning of the administration, it was kind of a giddy feeling where he was kind of coming out like a bull in a china shop. And I love the fact that he named RFK Jr. or something. And I said, because I didn't think he would. I thought he would do what he did the first time and just name, people like Marco Rubio, which he did name, but he named RFK Jr., named Tulsi Gabbard, which was good. And he named Matt Gaetz initially, who would have been great. And they made sure, Matt Gaetz was one of two members of Congress to not accept AIPAC money, just by the way. And I'm sure it was a coincidence. And the other one was Thomas Massie, who after he gave in, who now Trump wants to primary and get rid of. He's the best member of the House they have. And Trump, while endorsing Lindsey Graham again. So that's the kind of thing with Trump where he'll do something good and then he'll do two bad things. And it's impossible to figure him out, but that's the kind of stuff he does. But yes, naming RFK Jr. and he finally has a base of power. We'll see what he does with it. Again, this sexting scandal coming out, I don't like the sounds of it. That may take him down. I don't know. But yeah, I give him credit for that because he didn't nominate anybody good his first time around, and he has a handful of good ones, including especially RFK Jr. And the fact that it's a crossover. Same thing with Tulsi Gabbard. The best members, they're former Democrats. So it's nice to see something like that. But the Democratic Party's exist now is just, it's pretty much satanic. So they're not going to support anybody doing anything that would expose real corruption.
What do you think about what's happening with Elon and Doge?
Yeah, I've written a lot about that. And again, Elon Musk is even more controversial than Trump in terms of his past. I mean, I've seen the pictures of him dressed as Baphomet with the upside down cross around his neck, and his mom, I think is a practicing witch. I don't know. They're both flashing these occult hand signals all the time when you see them. And he was a darling of the left for a long time. They couldn't wait to line up and buy his cars, which is ironic now because now they're blowing them up or trying to blow them up. But they loved him for a long time. They were pushing. So he was an unexpected voice. Let's put it that way. When he bought X and started talking about free speech, he said he's very much like Trump. He says a lot of good stuff. How much he does, I don't know, because I argue with a lot of people over Doge. I said, this is great. This is what those of us on the left a long time ago used to talk about, sunshine laws, sunshine and transparency. It's the best disinfectant. So this is great that the people are finding out at least where a tiny bit of their money is going, and they're saying, look at this. Why is it going here instead of going for, where it's supposed to go? It looks like a giant slush fund, giant money laundering. And that's just a drop in the bucket. So I said, this is great. And hopefully they go on and audit the Pentagon, the CIA, and the FBI, and Federal Reserve, especially, and HHS with Bobby Kennedy get up a field day over there. We might find out a lot more about COVID, if they audited all that. But it seems to have slowed a little bit. The attacks on him were ridiculous. And I said, look, I understand his past and everything. I can't say anything about that. I don't know why he's still, doing the thing triangle with his hands. Trump does it too. I don't know what that means, or it's really some kind of Freemasonic occult thing. I don't know, but they do it a lot. But I think he's got the right enemies, like Trump does, and they're an unlikely alliance as well, because Musk was not considered any kind of conservative until very recently, and he tweets a lot of great stuff. So I don't know. I generally, like I said, I'm hopeful for all. I catch it from both sides because I'm a Trump agnostic and I'm a Musk agnostic too. So it's a very small minority group. And I said, I'm aware of both of their pasts. I'm aware. I've seen the pictures of Trump laughing and partying with Hillary Clinton, Bill. I know that, but we'll see if they do good things. If something good, if I get that $5,000 Doge check, which appears increasingly unlikely, that'll be more than my government's done for me in my entire life. So I certainly applaud that. If Trump really, bans the IRS and all the stuff he's talking about, those are obviously great things, but will they happen? I don't know. In the next minute he's bombing Yemen for no reason at all, killing a bunch of civilians. So that's the problem with it we have with both of them. But I don't discount them. I don't discard them just because of that. I said, I try to look at them with an unbiased eye. And like I said, if Joe Biden had done something good, I would have, as bad as I thought he was, I would have said, okay, that's great. So that's why I told people, look, if Trump does something good, I'll be the first one to praise him. If he doesn't, you're going to hear me write about what I call the Trumpenstein Project again, where he's all in on it. I have to call it as I see it.
Wow, well, that's really important. And I think this is a good time. We're going to take a really quick break. Today, we're talking to Donald Jeffries, the Deep State investigative reporter, and we're talking about his new book, American Memory Hole: How the Court Historians Promote Disinformation. We're going to take a really quick break. We'll be right back.
We also have an apparel line on our store that has just the best things. In fact, I go and shop at my own store. I mean, I really do go and buy stuff out of my own store. They have t-shirts and sweatshirts and cups and mugs and totes. We've got a great designer. We're always adding new things all the time. And either one of those two product lines, either our private label supplements, our Opti line, the white bottles with the green leaves on it, or with the apparel store, and they're two separate stores. They do not have a single shopping cart. It's like you go in one store and get your groceries and you go to the other store and get your shoes. Well, these are two separate stores, but you can use the same affiliate code. If you use the code podcast, when you go to the checkout, you can get 10% off on everything you buy every time you go to the store.
Well, welcome back, everyone. You know, Donald, let's dig into the meat of your book of the American Memory Hole. You say that so few in the general public even know the official story, let alone being able to tell them that it's inaccurate. I thought that's a statement that comes directly from your book. And I thought it was just like, it hopped off the page to me. What do you think we can do about that? I mean, they don't teach history, even the history that they're supposed to teach in school anymore. And you listed a lot of examples about how people, didn't even know the original colonies or who we even
Right.
left. I mean, what's happening to our culture by not having that history in it?
Yeah, well, I think I've called Americans historically illiterate. I don't know that they always were, but Americans were fooled. When I was in school, I don't remember them teaching anything about the Kennedy assassination, but at the end it would be like a one-liner, and they just said Oswald did it. There was no analysis or anything like that, and they're. You need to have people need to have an understanding. If that's why I call it, when I mentioned earlier, I said I'm trying to bring history into accord with the facts, and I quote Harry Elmer Barnes from that. I mean, Harry Elmer Barnes is the one who started calling historians court historians. So that's my tip of the hat to him. I use that term all the time because this was a guy who was a mainstream liberal, and he made the mistake of looking at World War I and saying, why did we fight that at some point? And he was one of the first victims of the blacklist back then. He got You can't write for the Nation anymore. You can't appear in the New York Times. That's where he was. He was banished, and he was one of the early victims of FDR's cancel culture. With his people, they didn't have internet then, but they just didn't get work. FDR literally would call up newspaper editors and radio stations and say, "Hey, look, we don't want this guy in the air. We don't want this. We don't want you to publish." So he drifted into, eventually, the only people that have him would be revisionist historical groups. And he used that term court historian. So I use that to, to try to, as a tip of the hat to him. But, it's trying to, it is hard to, but it's hard to enlighten Americans on anything, isn't it? I mean, it's not just history, but try to explain our money system to them. I've tried many times and they can't grasp the fact that we have a legalized counterfeit system. Every time the Federal Reserve under any time any bank under the Federal Reserve system makes a loan, it's created out of thin air. The money doesn't exist. There used to be 10% reserves, which was ridiculous enough. That meant 90% of the principal of every loan was imaginary. Now they don't even have any reserves. And so obviously the interest they charge you is imaginary. So they couldn't call in the loans if they tried, because it's the money didn't exist. And people, they just give you a blank look. And I said, you understand there are people in prison for doing that counterfeited money. It's just, we would all love to be able to, if somebody comes up, they're down on their luck. Hey, I need some money. Okay, I'll lend you $1,000. I only have $100 in my bank account, but I'll just write a check and it's fine. Yeah, and that's what our government does, what our banks do under the fractional reserve lending system. They do that every day. That's why My sympathy, I hate it when conservatives say, that guy deserved to have his car repossessed, or you deserve to have your home foreclosed on. If you made one payment, they came out ahead because they didn't put any resources into it. So no, they're the deadbeats because they're legalized counterfeiters. But you try telling it to most people, and it's I quote J. Edgar Hoover on that, of all people, because he was obviously a great conspirator. But when he was talking about the communist conspiracy, he hit the nail on the head for any of this by saying the average person cannot understand and will not understand or believe the scope of this. So you tell them you're part of the medical system. If you tell the average person that our medical system is the third leading cause of death, and I think it's probably number one now because they're not taking into account the vaccine. They're not admitting all that, but third is pretty bad. If you tell people, they give you a look. I said, so do you understand what that means? I mean, why are you trusting? It's the same thing with banking or anything else. When you try to tell them, they either don't think you're telling the truth, or it's especially if the system has been well to them. If the system's doing, if they make a lot of money and they're set and their children went to a nice college, they don't want to hear about the people that are struggling and the system isn't working for. Because, hey, the system worked great for me. Get a job, buddy. I mean, that's their attitude. And so I'm basically talking to the people that that the system hasn't worked well. I'm waiting to hear from the first eccentric billionaire that likes my work, but it hasn't happened yet.
It's interesting how when Elon talked about in the Treasury how Doge found what he called the 14 magic money machines that just cranked out billions and billions of dollars that went to whoever, to wherever, with no accountability, no backing to anything. And I just found that just and it was just sort of a blip on the news. Like it just went by. People didn't see how disastrous that was and how horrible our Department of Treasury has been for all of these years. It's like if you and I just wrote an invoice for $1 billion and sent it to the Treasury, they'd send you a check. I mean, that's just with no accountability, no tracking, no anything. I'm hoping that the next thing that that happens with all of this identification of fraud and money mismanagement, I'm hoping that the next level is tracking where that money went. Because, if I'm going to wire you money, there's a my account and a your account. If I send you a check, you have to endorse the back of the check to cash it. They have to know, they may not be able to trace every single penny, but the lion's share went into bank accounts that they should be able to know at least the first step. Then where it went from there is, subject to discussion because, of all of the NGOs that are set up to funnel money into wherever. But they should be able to find that first step. Do you think that's ever going to happen?
Well, that's why the disclosures have been great, and they've been fancy to say, "Wow, this is incredible." And it didn't shock me too much, but it's still amazing to hear. But I'm at the point now where, for instance, USAID, that was the what they focus on, which is we know now as a conduit for the CIA, but it's kind of a small piece of the puzzle. So if we're seeing all this juicy stuff there, imagine what the CIA itself has or the Pentagon. But they know the name of the person. She's the acting director of USAID. She's a Biden leftover, a holdover. They have an email from her where she's instructing the USAID employees to destroy all evidence before Doge can look at it. So that's pretty good evidence. And so I've been trying to, of course, Elon Musk doesn't know who the hell I am. He's not going to pay attention to it. But every time he posts something like that, I always say, okay, Elon, you know the name of this person. You have the evidence in the email. When will she be prosecuted? And that's where we're waiting for the prosecutions. And that's what people are getting fed up because the disclosures are great. But if no one's held accountable, then it's like how many times do we hear about the Social Security recipients that have been dead for 200 years and all that stuff? And of course, the other side just says it's fake, which they use Trump's fake news all the time now, too, probably more than he does. Okay, well, there's one way to prove if it's legitimate or not. So I said, if I'm working for Doge, I think you can get to the bottom of the people that are getting Social Security that don't deserve to be. You find out all those checks have been sent to either an address or they've been deposited in a bank account. So
Exactly.
you just go to the address, to who's living there, or you say who owns the bank account. I mean, it's pretty simple to do. Those 18, 19-year-old whiz kids, they can figure out. I haven't heard about them doing it. So that's what, and it gives fodder to the other side to say, oh, she's just talking about it. It's fake, because do something about it. Yeah, it's a big problem, but, and there may be lots of people involved, but you assign, a person, you take these 10 people, you take these 10 people. It ought to be easy to confront. But so far, I haven't heard about anybody being arrested. As I said, all the talk that Trump has and all the great stuff he says, the first per that whenever he prosecutes anybody, it will be the first time he's prosecuted anybody, other than his own people in the first administration. His own Justice Department did that. So we'll see what happens. Kash Patel talks a strong game sometimes. Pam Bondi has the Epstein list on her desk for, and she has 10 different stories about it, and has all these ridiculous, very dubious people of the alt-right walking around with empty folders and, being photographed with them. Yeah, where is it? What happened to the Epstein list? And I have a little hope for Representative Luna in Congress. I mean, I think she's going to have Oliver Stone working. I know a few of the people that I worked with her a little bit, and she's saying some of the right stuff. Now she's talking about a picture I've never heard of. I'm scared she's probably messing something up and she didn't word it right, but I hope I'm wrong. But I've never heard of a picture that shows Lee Harvey Oswald standing next to the vehicle. That's the way she described it at the time of the shooting. I don't know what she meant. I have a feeling she said it wrong, but we'll see. I've never heard of anything like that, but she's talking about it. So I'm interested in that, those hearings. I'll definitely be watching them.
Yeah, for sure. And I totally agree with you. I mean, it's like I read a report that some guy out of Louisiana had something like 31 Social Security numbers and 31 addresses and was collecting $1.1 million a month from Social Security, from all these different. Why hasn't he been
Yeah,
arrested? You know, why?
exactly.
I mean,
They
they know the name, they know where that whole thing. I mean, that's a very obvious case of why there has been no arrests. I want to get back to your book a little bit here because I read through your chapter on Woodrow Wilson and Colonel House and the anti-war censorship that was happening at that time, and the League of Nations was formed, and income tax in 1913, the mistreatment of Alice Paul and the women suffragettes, that it took them 60 years after Black men had the right to vote for
Right.
women to do that. And all of that seems to have happened in the early 1900s. That has set the sort of the stage for where we are politically in our country right now. And few know about this history. I do know because that's an area of history that I've studied a lot of, and I really enjoyed reading it in your book because you filled in a lot of things that I wasn't aware of. Can you talk about that whole era a little bit and how that's led to where we are today?
Sure. I mean, and Woodrow Wilson, again, you know what I think of Abraham Lincoln, and I won't get, but I mean, people can, my other book, Crimes and Cover-Ups in American Politics, 1776, 1963, I went into a lot, and we talked more about Lincoln in this as well. I think he set the precedents, a lot of dangerous precedents, but Woodrow Wilson took it a step farther, and he's the one that first really plunged us into globalism. He's the one that really, eviscerated, George Washington's advice in the farewell, his farewell address, and John Quincy Adams, who said America does not go abroad in search of foreign monsters to destroy, which obviously that's all we do now. But Wilson took, and I was amazed, and Peter Csikas did a lot of the research on that, and he just kept sending me stuff. I mean, that one of the most my favorite anecdotes there was one of the times when they invaded Haiti. I mean, they invaded Mexico like 8 times. And I describe in the book the atrocities that in all these places, the familiar atrocities you would later see in Afghanistan and Iraq, which came directly from the Union Army strategy, their total war strategy, the scorched earth strategy during the Civil War. That became official policy of the United States, and we see it every conflict. That's why it's no surprise when I hear about it today. But in this case, they targeted civilians, lots of rape, lots of theft. You see that all the time. But they were actually in Haiti, all Black country. Franklin Roosevelt was a young assistant secretary of the Navy then, and of course a chicken hawk extraordinaire, ardent supporter of World War I, but he was going to go nowhere near a battlefield. And him and his cousin there is a fascinating story that Peter found, where they were seriously discussing building a plantation in Haiti. Now, FDR is the darling liberal. The guy wanted his own plantation. There's a lot of evidence to show that FDR was an actual racist, which is ironic because they claim most of these guys were. And there's a lot of evidence that he was. So, but he was one of Wilson's guys, and if you just look at everything, Wilson eviscerated, because he was throwing World War I protesters in prison, like Eugene Debs, the great socialist. JFK's father, by the way, Joe Kennedy Sr., who I go into a little bit, I'm doing more about trying to restore his reputation. I think he was a great patriot. I don't believe any of the lies about him, the bootlegger and mafia, all that's from CIA and mafia sources, and its attack on the Kennedys. But he was a World War I protester as well. JFK's father, Joe Kennedy Sr., JFK got his peacenik stuff that you saw in the American University speech in 1963. He came by it naturally. His father hated war. He was a member of the America First Committee in World War II as well. And he made m very many impassioned speeches, on behalf of it. But Wilson loved war. Wilson was also a eugenicist. As you know, I have in the story how he, as governor of New Jersey, he started the first forced sterilization program. And so the idea that this guy's a liberal, I don't know where they get off on that. He was constantly, the fact that he wanted the League of Nations, I guess, somehow that's progressive. But he hated free speech like today's left does. And he, when they imprisoned all the World War I war protesters, that's their right, isn't it? Went to the Supreme Court, where another great liberal, Oliver Wendell Holmes, another eugenicist and pro-war advocate. He's the one who came up with the "you can't yell fire in a crowded theater." Most people, no American, no, even I didn't know it, that that's where that comes from. He justified Wilson imprisoning World War I protesters as saying you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. As I've said many times, however you look at it, protesting a war is not yelling fire in a crowded theater. But you tell that to the average American, again, they give you a blank look. When you say you can't, do you know where that comes from? No. Okay, this is where it comes from. It doesn't have any impact on them. Oh, you still can't do it. Okay. And why can't you yell fire in a crowded theater? What, there's a fire? The whole thing is stupid, but a lot of terrible stuff came from Wilson. There's no question about it. I would put him right up there with Lincoln and FDR as the worst presidents. And ironically, the court historians, those are the three best according to them. So.
Oh my, yeah, wow, yeah. There was a lot that happened in that period of time between 1900 and about 1920. And the stock market crash that really changed the entire landscape of America and put us to where we are today. I want to move on because there's a couple of other things I really want to ask you about. In your chapter about 9/11, you say that only 446 of 2,970 9/11 victims are in the Social Security Death Index. After all these years, they still haven't found out where the rest of these people are. I mean, what does that really mean?
Yeah, apparently not. And that's what people said about incidents like Sandy Hook and Boston bombing and things like that, that they've done, more deep diving than I have. I mean, I've looked up a few of them and seen that they weren't there or whatever to try to verify it. But yeah, that's what you would say. Of course, if you experience a loss like that, you would want to, eventually at some point put the claim in for their money if you're the surviving spouse. So it doesn't, that's not human nature to not do that. And so it's something that should be looked at. But the problem is with that, it's almost a Sandy Hookish type thing where people get upset when you even bring it up. Oh, how could you say something like that? Well, just saying it is what it is. If that's true, that's an oddity, isn't it? But yeah, it should be looked at like all this stuff. But it's one of many, kind of dangling questions out there.
You talked a lot about, I was very interested in that whole section in your book about 9/11. And just for the audience, it's American Memory Hole: How the Court Historians Promote Disinformation. It's really readable and it's very, very good. There's this whole section in there about 9/11 and the flight that landed in Pennsylvania, that there wasn't any fuselage and they don't have any, they've done soil testing and they don't find
Yeah.
any. They don't really find any body parts, and the coroner never filed any reports about dead people. And then there was this whole thing about the landing that happened in Cleveland and that whole flight pattern. And because I'm from Cleveland, that really interested me where you wrote about that. But it was dropped and never talked about again. And apparently they left people off and don't know where they went. And can you talk about that and expound on that for our audience a little bit?
Yeah, Flight 93 hasn't been mentioned as much because we talked about the Pentagon and obviously the Twin Towers, but it's very interesting. I don't know what happened there. Like I said, is you, I just put the, I don't theorize it. I put what people said. I source everything, and you can see there was a coroner there who said like 10 different things. He kept contradicting himself. So, but it doesn't look like it was a normal crash. Everybody pretty much said that. It didn't look like a plane crash there. So, but and your the Cleveland reference is really fascinating because it was by the mayor of Cleveland. He went on, I don't know if he went on television, but he was referenced in the mainstream media. And he very specifically talked about the plane landing in Cleveland, Flight 93, which is what it was, after, and they landed there because of bomb threats. I think that's what they used. Okay, now, of course, people can be mistaken, but I look at those kinds of things. That's a very detailed mistake. You know, it's a very detailed, it's like, you know, in the Vince Foster case, you know, they, there was a detailed mistake where there was a Secret Service memo talked about how his body was found in his car. And of course, that contradicts everything about the crime scene that was found on the body, I mean, on the ground at Fort Marcy Park. How do you make a mistake like that? How do you make a mistake like this that a plane landed that you're later going to claim crashed in Pennsylvania, where some people think it was shot down by the government if it was there? I don't know. I have no idea what that means. But again, in a real investigation, it cries out first. You bring the mayor in and you say, where'd you get this information from? Because you're saying that they landed there after a bomb threat. Who told you this? Where did you get this information from? That's what real investigators would do, but we don't have real investigators because they're obviously covering up for something. So I have no, Flight 93 is just, it's just, I was, you know, really flabbergasted as I was going through all the information I could there. I'd never written a lot that much about it before, but it's a huge, you know, black hole trying to figure out what happened. And you know, I still don't know, but I know that they lied about it, and it's part of the overall 9/11 lie. And for people to think that, I don't think that's because Saudi Arabia did it or, you know, some terrorist group did it. This is, you know, everything about 9/11 cries out inside job.
Well, yes, and yet we still go through the airport and put our hands over our heads and get screened and stand in line forever. And now this whole thing with the real ID that they're trying to get passed is just it's just going to have. I've had a lot of guests on, and we've talked about that a lot. It's about having the UN in your pocket and how that it's the first step to the Chinese social credit scores to have the real ID, you know, as your driver's license. And Congress doesn't seem to, you know, we've contacted a lot of people in Congress. They're like, well, I don't, you know, nobody's really complaining about this. I mean, I really don't get
Yeah.
it. And so, you know, it seems like they don't even know what that's all about, or if they do, they're being, you know, mum's the word about it. And it's just the next step of the, it looks like the Renaissance of America, you know, when Trump says it's going to be the golden years of American history, but then it could be the golden years of enslavement in the ultimate handcuffs too, particularly with all these Neuralink satellites that are going up now of Trump. There's another 20 going up this week. I just heard on the radio this morning. You know, which brings me to the last chapter of your book, which is just fascinating. I mean, I find that the entire book was really great, but that very last chapter, the last four pages, where you have someone that remains anonymous that used to work inside of Congress talking about
Yes.
the Congress people and all of that. And you said that this is a prelude to your book on Trump and Congress. And it just sounds fascinating. Can you give us a little glimpse into what that's gonna where that's going to lead us?
Well, you know, since that time, I didn't anticipate Trump coming back as president. So I wrote, you know, probably 180 pages about Trump, but that was his first term and in between and so forth, being prosecuted nonstop and everything. I just got a whole other book. I can't do it now because for a while because he's got 4 years in office. So I have to chronicle that and everything. So that's why I'm actually writing a book about sports right now, believe it or not. That became my and there's believe me, there's a lot of stuff there that's controversial, but and that's simply because I had to put this on hold because I don't know how this is going to turn out. And that's the problem with Trump when you're trying to write about him. It's an ongoing story. And especially if you know, there's talk, he's talking about a third term, which I think he can do that, but who knows? FDR had four terms and they stopped that supposedly, but he's claiming, you know, so if he gets a third term, I don't think I'll ever write it, I guess, because or I'll have to have like a part one or something. So I don't know how the Trump story is going to turn out. But so the woman you talk about that was a she's again, yes, she wanted to marry an anonymous and actually used her as well anonymously for bullyocracy. She was a she went through a lot as a bullied victim, and but she had some. Those stories are that I again I would have never known about that if it hadn't been for the Brown Bag Club, you know, where they, you know, apparently they're just, you know, before Paul Wellstone's plane crashed, there was a brown bag on his desk. So, and apparently this is something that never goes outside the Senate. So I was just, you know, my eyes were this wide when I was reading. I said, wow, this is incredible. Apparently, I guess they all know when they go in there that, hey, this is, so maybe that's why they stay in line so much. So they don't want a brown bag on their desk, but, yeah, she had some fascinating, people could read the fascinating stuff about Bob Dole, who was apparently a monster, and some other people.
Yeah, well, you know, it's so interesting because of all the things that you've uncovered about the past. I hope that you will dig out all this nonsense about our Congress. And I used to be really hopeful that we would be able to get our constitutional republic back. I just think that the deep state is so deep and it's so entrenched and it's multinational that the only way to get it back is to completely pull it out by the roots and upend it, which is not where most Americans want to go, I don't think.
No, and it's we really only have one weapon at our disposal. We can't win an armed revolution. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter because, you know, we're talking about the Pentagon. I mean, they have force maybe powers that we don't even know. We can't win an armed revolution. We have to use our powers, our only power, and that's we have an incredible advantage in numbers. But you know, Orwell talked about that in 1984. He called them the proles. We're the proles. The proles, he said, you know, they could have overwhelmed the party in a second if they came together. But they were, and he actually described they were arguing about gambling and sports and drinking beer, which is, you see it today. That's what we do. We can't come together. And so we're divided by race and now this crazy transgender stuff. So there's so many things dividing us that we can't come together against the common enemy.
Yeah.
We know who the common enemy is, but we still, and the common enemy uses us against each other. And that's the problem. Until we can do that, I don't see, you know, recently I had some hope for the local level for school boards. You know, I live in Fairfax County, Virginia, and Loudoun County, Virginia, especially was the epicenter of those protests for the students. I mean, the parents angry at the school board. The one guy had his daughter raped there by a transgender, and they attacked him and beat him and arrested him for bringing it up. But Fairfax County recently, I read, they voted 16 to 0, the school board, to continue gender studies in elementary school. So obviously none of them were voted out. And this is in, you know, direct contradiction to Trump's supposed executive order, where he said, I'm banning, you know, DEI. Well, that's pretty DEI to me. So what, I don't understand what was the point of that. So that is what makes you really disillusioned. If you, because I said, if you can't affect change at the school board level, you can't affect change. Because that hopefully you might be able to get something done there, but it doesn't look like that. Either we don't have enough parents, they're really that stupid and they want their children to, you know, be listing their pronouns in the kindergarten or something, and they want transgender story hour, they want critical race theory, they must, or they're not counting the votes even at that level. So either option isn't good. But that was very disheartening to hear. I had a mother and her daughter has been incredible, 14-year-old that's been in Chippewa Valley County. You can see her videos online, just chewing these school board members out. She does a great job. But if the parents don't agree and they don't stand behind and say, no, we don't want these petty tyrants on the school board. We don't want somebody making $400,000 a year who's turning out, cranking out students who can't read or write and don't know basic math, but they want to transition them from one gender to another. So it's, you know, that so that's just, you know, one question. It kind of goes, I mean, I wrote bullyocracy. I don't have a high opinion of schools because of that, because I know how they deal with bullying. But that the problem is huge. It goes way beyond politics. There's a cultural element to it. That's why I talk about that stuff a lot, because it's part of it. Because it just shows that, you know, there's this is a I think this is a you know, this is a spiritual battle. And I think we're the forces that we're, you know, we're contending with are as dark as can be. And we have to stay with the light, and we have to try to be good. That's I tell people all the time, try to walk the walk. You know, be as more, we're all sinners, but you know, be as moral as you can, you know, in your life, and try to stand up for the right thing. And you know, maybe if enough people do that, I don't know. I still have hope. I watched a lot of Frank Capra movies, so there's still some hopium.
Okay. Well, Donald Jeffries, I'm so grateful and so honored to have you on the on my show again. It's been a while, and I've learned so much from your books and from you personally. How can we best support you, and where can we get this great book, and which I really advise everybody to read, The American Memory Hole: How the Court Historians Promote Disinformation. It's a really, really good and important book. Where's the best place to get it for you?
Well, I appreciate that. You know, most, except for Masking the Truth, which is my book about COVID, and it's the most shadow banned book in the world, you pretty much have to get that through the publishers now, because Amazon and Barnes, they just got rid of it, you know, and make it. But yeah, they just, that's the only one of my books I did that too. But and I do get more money from the publisher if you order that through that. My other books, I always tell people get the best deal, because they give writers so little, the royalty is so small, that you look for your best deal. You know, it's not going to make that big a difference to me. I'll be happy if you buy it, or if you ask your library to buy it. And but so really, you know, Amazon is good because those numbers mean something. People pay attention to how many sales, what the sales ranking is, and they pay attention to how many reviews and ratings you have. Because most people are followers. I don't really like to support Amazon, but that's the only place, as a writer, Amazon is the only place you can look and have any idea how your book is doing. Otherwise, you have no idea. I don't know how, you know, how many people are reading it already, but that would be the play. And but the supporting me, I'm shadow banned everywhere except on Substack, so that's still a free speech platform. My main Substack there is I Protest, and it's donaldjeffries.substack.com. You subscribe to me there. That's the best way to support me.
And do you have a website where you sell your books?
I don't sell it myself. No, DonaldJeffries.media is my website, but somebody runs it, and I think it's—I don't know if it's completely up to date. But I always tell them to go to Substack, DonaldJeffries.substack.com. And no, I don't sell any of them. So, but you know, because they're all published by somebody. But and I, you know, I have very few. I have still some copies of Bullyocracy and a couple others. People contact me and want autographed copies, and I'll do that. But other than that, I just say, you know, find the best deal you can. I mean, it's. These books are on a lot of places, and I'm sure they're cheaper at, you know, some places than other.
Okay, well, everybody should get them, and it should be part of your permanent library, because it's got so much information in there that you'll want to reference it and go back to it and read it again. So with that, I want to close out. As we close out today, I want to say a special thanks to everyone, especially the Tenpenny Prime members. Your monthly support makes all that we do be able to happen. So with that, I want to close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible. I close all of my podcasts with, whether they are live or pre-recorded, which is Romans 12, 12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until the next time, lean into God, trust Him for everything. We'll see you again here next week, same place, same time, 11 a.m. for the Tenpenny Files on your health. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com, and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.